Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Happy New Year, little buddy! Happy 2017!
Happy New Year!
It's the first episode of the new year!
That's right. First episode of 2017. First episode of Season 2.
Season 2, the saga continues.
Bigger, badder.
Bigger balls.
Bigger balls. Bigger explosions. What balls? What do you mean?
The ball, I guess, like in New York, the New Year's ball drop thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's a big ball.
It's a big ball.
Big balls are coming.
So I guess it's actually not 2017 when we're recording this, but by the time everybody listens to this, it'll be 2017.
It'll be the new year. Happy New Year. Hope you're sober by now.
Yeah.
If not, well, who knows? You might enjoy it more.
Sober up and get back to work.
Nobody ever wants to hear that.
I know. It's the worst kind of thing to wake up to.
That's right. Sober up and get back to work.
Well,
if I had a nickel for every time I've heard that in my life.
Sober up and get back to work. How many nickels would you have?
I'd have enough to rub together.
There you go. This episode, we decided, is going to be on something that's kind of a little bit topical. Came across a topic idea.
An old idea led to a new idea.
Yeah, it did. We came across this article discussing defamation about a movie, and then there was a kind of a new news story that popped up. So we figured, hey, it was meant to be.
Was meant to be.
Well, this episode is going to kind of revisit something we talked about a little bit before, and that is defamation.
But it was also brought up before that we should cover lawsuits that stem from movies.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Remember that? I'd have to look back at the Facebook page, but it was brought up there that we should look into lawsuits from movies.
Oh, well, that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing.
But mainly with a focus on defamation, but lawsuits from movies nonetheless.
And if you were the one that suggested that, sorry we didn't take the time to look back up your name before we started, but we're just now sobering up. It is the new year.
That's right. Sober up and get back to podcasting. Well, just to give a quick primer on defamation, when I say defamation, some people split the hairs and a common law was split between like libel and slander. But when I say defamation, essentially what I'm talking about is the act of harming the reputation of another by making a false statement to a third person. So basically you're saying something false about somebody and you're publishing it to a third person or party or group or something like that. And that's just your kind of a basic definition of defamation. That's a bit of a tongue twister.
So you're talking trash about them, huh?
Talking trash. And generally it's not true. Although there are some instances, and there's a case that we had talked about on the last episode we talked about on defamation. Because you generally, truth has been an absolute defense to defamation, but there was a case called Noonan v. Staples in Massachusetts, which came out, which we discussed a little bit, and essentially the person told the truth, but it was done with malicious intent. And so the court ruled that even if you disseminate something that's truthful, if it's done with malicious intent, it can still be considered defamation or libel or something along those lines.
That is correct, counselor.
So the first libel statute came about in 1275. And it came from the Latin term scandalous magnatum.
Scandalous magnatum.
And essentially, it translates as libel upon peers. And from that time,
we hear something about that in Game of Thrones. That sounds like something they'd say in Game of Thrones. And then they go out and cut your head off or something.
They cut off his scandalous magnatum.
Woo! That sounds like John Bobbitt.
So from like the earliest times, 1275, when the first libel statute came about, until medieval times, defamation was generally used to protect the crown, the king, nobility, regardless of whether it was the truth or not. And it didn't really apply much to the peasants, but they didn't have two nickels to rub together anyway, so what did it matter? Around the 1600s, the principle that the truth is a defense to defamation kind of came to fruition. People started saying, well, you know, if you're saying things, but it's true, then it really shouldn't get you in trouble. And this also came to the United States in 1733 in the Crown v. Zinger case, which we talked about before in the defamation episode. And that's when John Zinger went on trial for allegedly defaming the New York governor, Bill Cosby.
Hey, hey, hey!
And
have you got your Jell-O pudding?
That sounds like your Goofy voice.
Well, they run together.
Yeah.
You'd sound goofy, too, if you'd been roofied.
And Andrew Hamilton represented John Zinger, and he argued that the statements were the truth in a defense to the defamation, and he ended up winning.
You don't imagine that's where they coined the phrase a zinger, do you?
I don't think so.
Boy, that was a zinger there. You sure got him.
Maybe it was.
Hmm.
Can you imagine somebody in a pointy hat in the 1700s saying, oh, that was a zinger?
That was a zinger. And they'd have a big handlebar mustache, and they'd be holding a cane, and they'd dance across in front of you. Da, 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 da. Oh, that's a Johnny Carson, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're mixing up some genres there.
Do you think he was around it then?
Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
He might have been.
He's pretty old. He could have been.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of defamation in a nutshell there, quickly. We talk about in another episode, previous episodes, if you want to know more about defamation, maybe go listen to it. We won't tell you which ones. So you have to listen to all of them.
So, but today, besides dealing with defamation, we're going to deal with two particular cases that had to do with defamation.
That's right.
The first one being of extremely old origins. It's not extreme. It's old to us, but it's not really old in overall history of things.
You know, when you look at the actual date, and this was back in, let's see here.
Like 1927 or something like that.
Yeah. Basically the lawsuit took place in 1933, but the alleged acts were back in 1916, which, you know, is about 100 years ago.
Well, which, right at 100 years ago, huh?
But the thing is, you think about 1916, it seems like
another world.
Yeah, it's just things are so different then, especially
when you see about people in history that were alive then, because like this particular character, I thought was way back there.
Yeah, I thought he was much older.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's also too because the Russian dynasty kind of went back so long that when you think about it, being kind of more archaic, I guess, than 1916.
So what we want to talk about is your friend and ours, Rasputin.
That's right. He was, if you don't know who Rasputin is, he was quite the character back in early 19th century.
Born in late 1800s.
Early 1900 Russia.
Yeah.
He was a Russian mystic, and he was kind of the mystic to the Tsar and Tsarina during the last, what was the name of that dynasty?
The Russian dynasty.
The Russian dynasty.
I always thought Tsarita, when I was reading that's pretty neat. I figure she must have been able to dance. So that's like a combination of Tsar and ballerina, Tsarina.
Tsarina?
Yeah, it's a Tsar that can dance. It's a Tsarina.
Well, rumor had it that she was doing some dancing with Rasputin back in the day.
Rumor has it he was doing some dancing with a lot of female escoffs back in those days.
Yeah, it does. That was kind of his MO, allegedly.
Yeah.
That actually kind of plays into what this whole defamation lawsuit was about as well. So, Rasputin, he in addition to being kind of notorious for being a lover, he was also very hard to kill, and he survived numerous assassination attempts. Well, a lot of the Russian aristocracy were kind of jealous of the influence that he had over the Tsar and the Tsarina, and that's kind of what led to all those different assassination attempts. And ultimately, what happened is a prince named Prince Felix Yusupov. He was one of the aristocrats, and he was...
Aristocats?
Aristocats.
Was he in the Disney movie?
He was not. That was my favorite Disney movie growing up, too. He was really unhappy with Rasputin, and he lured Rasputin to his basement where he poisoned him and shot him and killed him. So he actually killed the guy.
Well, that's into that dude.
Yeah, it was the end of Rasputin. And there's some other things that may have happened to Rasputin after that. There's allegedly part of his anatomy, which is on display at a erotic museum in Russia, all this weird stuff. So we're not really sure what happened there, but...
Well, to be fair, we're not really sure what happened with most of Rasputin's life.
That's true.
I mean, there are so many conflicting stories out there. When you go to research this guy, it just depends on who you talk to. And I think one of the problems was Russia was in such turmoil at the time. They had their aristocracy, but they also had people that were leaning towards more of a democratic government. And so they were constantly like establishing parliaments and disbanding them, then establishing some other type of government and disbanding it. And through it, the problem was Tsar Nicholas was not a very powerful person, not a very good leader. His wife, the Tsarina, the ballerina Tsar, she was very strong. And so she basically told him what to do. So Rasputin got in good with her by saving their son. He didn't really save him, but he was in the right place at the right time and got credit for it. So she then saw mystical powers in him. So he had influence over her and she owned him. So that was kind of where his power came from. But all these stories about a lot of these things you did, a lot of them were propaganda. Apparently, because it was all political, these people would spread lies about him. They were trying to turn public opinion against him, so they would make up these lies about him and do it. Now, some of them were lies. Some of them might have been the truth. You never knew. It just depended on what was going on politically at the time and who was trying to get power and who was in favor of who, and it all gets very confusing.
Yeah, if you've ever seen pictures of this guy, too, you should go on the internet and look at him.
He looks like he's a guy that's been found up in the mountains or something.
Yeah, he's weird looking. He's a weird looking dude. So after Prince Yusupov killed Rasputin, although the Tsarina was very upset, the Tsar let him off lightly and basically just exiled the prince and sent him off. And so it actually kind of saved the prince's life. Because soon thereafter, there was the Russian Revolution, and basically all the Russian aristocracy were pretty much murdered during that revolution. So basically by killing Rasputin, he kind of saved his own life.
Well, and then he figured out that the son, this is how he endeared himself to the Tsarina. I don't know that he knew it or just stumbled into it. The son was apparently a hemophiliac, is what the theory goes. But people didn't know about hemophilia at the time. So he was bleeding out due to a large hematoma on his leg that he had. And they couldn't stop the bleeding. And they were giving him aspirin to help with the pain. Well, aspirin's a blood thinner, so yeah. That made it even worse. Well, for whatever reason, I don't know whether it was religious or what, but he suggested they quit giving him the aspirin, and then the blood clotted, he quit bleeding, and so he was given credit with these mystical powers saving the kid's life because of what he was able to figure out, it saved him. So from then on, the Tsarina held him in close regard. But a lot of it, he just turned up at the right place at the right time and said the right things. And he's kind of like a Russian Forrest Gump. He just kind of floated through and would turn up at these places and say things. He was not educated. He never went to school. He did study in monasteries, but he studied the Bible. I mean, so all he was really educated in was the Bible. They said that he could translate the Bible into common terms that every man could understand. So this gave him a good following among the Christians in Russia at the time, because he had this knowledge and he could impart it and make the Bible interesting. Now, evidently, not many people could do that.
That's a good gift.
One of the things that everything was always in such disarray with the Russian government at that time. It said in the 17 months of the Tsarina's rule, they said that she was really the one ruling, from September of 1915 to February of 1917, Russia had 4 prime ministers, 5 ministers of the interior, 3 foreign ministers, 3 war ministers, 2 ministers of transport, and 4 ministers of agriculture. The ministerial leapfrog, as it came to be known, not only removed competent men from power, but also disorganized the work of the government, since no one remained long enough in office to master the responsibilities. So he kind of took advantage of all of that, and that's why he was able to retain power. The Tsar Nicholas, he was not a very strong person. He didn't know how to deal with people. He didn't know how to deal with conflict, and they locked themselves away. They were like the king and queen, and they locked themselves away and just didn't talk to people for long periods of time. And that gave everybody the impression that Rasputin was behind all this and much more powerful than probably he really was.
Yeah, he's become kind of a cult figure for sure. If you think about, there's even a Russian Imperial Stout named after him, a beer.
There's lots of it. There's also a lot of strip clubs are named Rasputin throughout Russia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he had a, even though he was a religious person, he was also supposedly had affairs with all these people, these women of aristocracy there, and lots of others. There was a scene in a movie that was banned in Russia at one time because there was an orgy scene that supposedly that this depicted something that he staged. So there's a lot of things, though, that are rumors. It depends on who you talk to as to what he actually took place and didn't take place.
Well, 16 years after Yusupov, I guess it's Yusupov, was exiled.
Yusupov, you mother of Puff.
Was exiled. MGM, the movie studio, produced a film called Rasputin and the Empress. And it was essentially based on the events surrounding the fall of the Russian dynasty. And one of the things that was really, this movie was famous for, is that it cast a famous Hollywood family, and that would be the Barrymore family.
Drew Barrymore's grandparents, I guess.
That's right, yeah. Because I didn't realize this, but she was from kind of a Hollywood aristocracy herself.
John Barrymore, yeah, famous actor. They bridged the gap from the silent movies into the first sound movies.
But all 3 siblings played different parts in this. Lionel Barrymore played Rasputin. Ethel Barrymore played the Tsarina, and John, who is the grandfather of Drew, he was Prince Paul Chagodiev, who was a composite character who murders Rasputin. So essentially, this Paul Chagodiev was based on, in part, on Yusupov. This exiled Russian prince, Yusupov, he was living penniless and he was in Paris. He heard about the film, and he thought it was defamatory. And his whole argument was that audiences would recognize that it was him as the fictional assassin, basically because he had written a book bragging about how he was the one that killed Rasputin. So he basically said, yeah, I killed him. He had already put that out there.
He did.
Killed him.
He wrote it in a book. Well, they were basically let go. The people that were there, they didn't like Rasputin anyway, so they kind of called off the police and said, let them go ahead and leave the country.
Yeah.
So they let them leave. They were never charged with the crime, even though they willingly told people, yeah, we killed him.
And so he wrote a book about it, and basically he felt that composite character, the Chagodiev, was based on him, since Chagodiev murders Rasputin in the film. So the funny thing is that Chagodiev himself could not sue for defamation. Could not sue the movie studio for that because he had already said he was the one who killed him. So it wasn't like they were saying, like, they were trying to imply he killed him, but he really didn't because he had already said he did. So he couldn't sue them because those were actually true statements. But the part of the movie that actually he was able to sue under was the fact that there's a scene in that movie where the Chigodiev's wife is raped by Rasputin in the movie. And he said his argument was, and his lawsuit was, that that actually defamed his wife. And that was the basis for his lawsuit.
Yeah, and they were... there was never, I mean, there was so much different, so many different stories. That was one of the stories that may have been out about him, but you didn't know what was true or what wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it was evidently it was true enough because he sued under it, and I'll go through a bit more, but they end up getting some money from it. And so in the movie, his wife is Princess Natasha, and she is actually a supporter of Rasputin. So in the movie, though, the mystic Rasputin is wary of the husband, and he hypnotizes and rapes Natasha, and then basically that makes her unfit to be his wife. And so at that point, the viewers would equate Chigodiev with Yusupov, so they would think Natasha was his wife, his actual wife, Irina. So I know it sounds a little bit confusing, but
very.
So essentially, basically, while Yusupov was portrayed kind of accurately in the film as to what he did, the wife in that story under the lawsuit was that not true, and therefore that's why they wanted to sue for defamation.
And so, I think they actually changed it around because they had the Barrymores all playing there. They didn't want to reenact this rape scene with John Barrymore with his sister.
Yeah.
So they actually changed the character so that they wouldn't have that problem, and then that's what created the defamation.
Yeah, in part. And actually, the story has it that there was an MGM researcher who pointed out that the factual discrepancy basically said that, hey, we better watch out because we think this guy might be able to sue us. And the studio heard what that researcher had to say, and then they fired her. They fired her. So the whole don't shoot the messenger thing didn't really work out for her.
No, that's not a good... I wouldn't want that job.
So anyway, they
don't confuse me with facts. My mind's made up.
But they released the movie, and it came out, and it made a little bit of money. But then Irina Yusupov, the guy who actually killed Rasputin, she sued the studio. And a jury in England awarded her £25,000.
Which was big money in them days.
That's right. It was, I guess about that time, it was about $125,000. And also, I think she got a settlement in the United States as well. So, and also, as part of the agreement, MGM had to take the film out of circulation. And it was out of circulation for decades. And they took that scene out when they did. And I guess it screws with the continuity of the movie too, because at the beginning of the movie, she likes Rasputin. Then all of a sudden there's something missing. And then all of a sudden she doesn't like him anymore. And you don't really know why.
Hey, something happened there.
Yeah. So it was kind of
like
out.
We lost a scene. We have lost time involved. They've been hanging around Bill Cosby.
But the movie, not the Bill Cosby who was the governor. By the way.
Yeah, we don't want to defame the New York Bill Cosby that was governor.
I don't think he's around either, because that was well before.
That was the 1800s, wasn't it?
1700s.
1700s, yeah. Okay.
That was actually before...
Well, he's probably not still here.
No, probably not.
I wouldn't think so.
He's slinging jelly pudding in heaven. So the movie now is actually... I think there's actually copies of it that have the rape scene in it. It's out now. That you can find it somewhere. I'm sure it's on the internet somewhere. Everything's on the internet somewhere.
Everything, true or false, it's there.
So, but as fallout from that whole saga we just told you about, movies now always put disclaimers in the movies, even if it's based on a true story. We always see something that says, "This is a work of fiction. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or actual events is purely coincidental." So that was what...
clears them if you put that disclaimer in there.
Yeah, that's what...
So that way if they say, that's like me, they say, no, we said at the beginning, it's not, no similarity.
Right. So that's the whole disclaimer.
But the thing is, they'll even put that in movies and then have at the beginning of the movie, this is based on factual events.
Yeah.
Well, so that way if somebody wants to sue, they've got their bases covered either way. How can you say this movie is based on factual events and say it doesn't resemble anybody that's living or dead?
Well, I would tell you, if somebody came to me and they had based a movie off of their life and they had done something defamatory in it and put them in a bad light, which had injured them, even if they had that disclaimer in there saying it wasn't really based on them, if there was enough evidence to show that it probably was, I would still take that case and file suit and see where it went. Because a lot of times disclaimers, they're good to kind of bar a lot of things, but just because you have a disclaimer doesn't mean you can just run wild with things.
Mike Meadow, purveyors of justice.
That's right. I want to see justice served. One of my favorite shows actually has one of my favorite disclaimers as well. I don't know if do you ever watch South Park?
Oh, yeah.
The beginning of that thing that flashes on the beginning. It says, all characters and events in this show, even those based on real people, are entirely fictional. All celebrity voices are impersonated, .. poorly. The following program contains coarse language and due to its contents should not be viewed by anyone.
Well, there you go. So if you watch it, you've been warned.
We told you not to watch
it. We told you not to watch this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Rasputin, everybody's heard that name before. And it, you know, but I really, until we got ready for this episode, I never really looked into what he actually did. I know that he was thought of to be mystical and all this kind of stuff. But I think a lot of it was just the myth of the man that grew after his death.
The myth of the man that grew?
The myth of the man.
There's allegedly other things about the man that supposedly grew.
Well, I think there was a lot of that stuff that they talked about that who knows if it was real or not. But there has been a lot of movies that were made about him. The original movie was a silent film, The Fall of the Romanovs, which was the family of the king.
Yeah, that was the name of the dynasty. I couldn't think of a minute ago. The
Romanov dynasty. Okay. That was in 1970. And one of the people that was actually a player in that whole thing played himself in that was actually involved in the whole thing. Then there was Rasputin's End in 1958. Rasputin, the Mad Monk, was a horror film with Christopher Lee, who was Rasputin, who was a famous horror actor. That's a hard word to say sometimes.
Horror actor?
I Killed Rasputin, 1967, a biographical film directed by Robert Hossein. Tom Baker turned in a chilling yet sympathetic performance as Rasputin in 1971 film Nicholas and Alexandra. Alexandra was the czarist, the czarina. What do we say? Is that what it is?
Czarina.
Yeah. In 1975, Elam Klimov finished a film about Rasputin called Agony. Let's see. There was a disco single called Rasputin in 1978 by a German-based pop and disco group, Boney M. Let's see. Rasputin was an opera written by Jay Reese in his own libretto at New York City Opera and was devoted to Beverly Sills. And then there was also Alan Rickman from Harry Potter fame.
Yeah.
He was in Rasputin, Dark Servant of Destiny, a 1996 HBO biographic. Rasputin was depicted as a vengeful antagonist in the 1997 American film Anastasia. His voice was performed by Christopher Lloyd, you know, the professor from
Back to the Future.
And singing was by Jim Cummings, though. So Christopher Lloyd can't sing, I guess. And then let's see here. Most recently, it says that Leonardo DiCaprio has bought the rights to a show about Rasputin that is a yet-to-be-developed film. So
he's definitely an interesting character.
Yeah, there's so many things out there about him. Hell, you could take it in any direction you want to go. And you could be right. Could be wrong, but all those people that were involved now are dead.
That's right.
So, you know, I guess their families might be around to say something about it, but they're not.
As long as you have that disclaimer.
Yeah.
Well, at the beginning of the show, we talked about how there was that was kind of our old story about defamation that we were going to talk about. But in the news recently, there's a new kind of a entertainment situation where there's a defamation story as well.
And they're not all dead. Well, no. Not all of them. Not a lot of them are, though.
Some of them are, yeah. This is the JonBenet Ramsey case. So for those of you who aren't familiar with it, JonBenet Ramsey was this child beauty queen who was murdered, I guess, it was like 20 years ago, 20 or 30 years ago.
1996, I think it was, wasn't it?
Well, that's almost 20 years ago, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was in Colorado, I believe, and no one knows exactly what, well, the public.
She was found dead on Christmas morning.
Was it Christmas morning?
Yeah, it was Christmas morning or Christmas Eve, something like that, or the day after Christmas.
It probably was almost exactly 20 years ago then.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the real story about what exactly happened to her. I mean, somebody probably does know, but
they're not talking.
Yeah, the public doesn't know. So recently there was
December 26, 1996.
Oh, really?
Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, in Boulder, Colorado. So CBS recently aired a miniseries about it, and they had all these different kind of experts on it who went over the evidence and things like that. And did you actually saw that, didn't you, Tom?
Right. I watched it. It was a two-part series.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I thought it was very interesting. And it also corrected some misconceptions. You know, there was a big thing where they convened a grand jury and gave them all their evidence and said, now, do you think there's enough to prosecute? Well, the prosecuting attorney came out and announced before everybody, the grand jury did not find any evidence of any wrongdoing by anyone that we have as a suspect. All family members have been cleared. And at this point, we are going to drop the case because we have no case. Well, you know what? That wasn't what the jury said.
Oh, they unleashed the grand jury tapes?
Yes. One of the members of the grand jury came forward anonymously, I think, and gave them the information that they did offer an indictment. What they said is that John and Patsy Ramsey mm-hmm. were both implicated in it, but that they were not the perpetrators of it, and left it at that point.
And that was what the grand jury found?
Mm-hmm. They found both of them complicit in the murder, but they did not say that they murdered him.
And that's what that miniseries found.
Yeah. So the question is, how can they be complicit, but they didn't perpetrate it?
They were trying to maybe help cover it up or something. It's probably, I guess, maybe the only logical conclusion to that.
Yeah. So then you know, of course, the grand jury doesn't come out and say who they thought did it.
Yeah.
They just say, based on the evidence we're given, here's what we think. And that's what they came back and thought. Well, the prosecutor dropped everything and said the grand jury didn't indict anybody.
Yeah, well, I can kind of see the problem with bringing a case saying you're implicated in it when you don't really know what happened.
But there were theories as far as what happened.
Yeah. Did this miniseries put out those theories?
Oh, yeah.
What were some of the theories they put out?
Well, the theories were there was supposedly some DNA that was found in JonBenet's underwear mm-hmm. that did not match anybody in the family or anybody that was at the home.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never identified that DNA. They also had a broken window in the basement where she was found in the basement. They had a broken window that was found there that they said this could have been where somebody came in. But they went and they reenacted. They rebuilt the crime scene because they couldn't get access to the house.
Do they still live there?
No. No, they're gone. But, of course, Patsy Ramsey died 10 years ago.
Oh, did she?
And I don't know if John Ramsey's still alive or not. I will say he's not, just because he hasn't appeared in any of these things that Burke Ramsey is the son, and he's been appearing in a lot of these different interviews and stuff. He had an interview with Dr. Phil before he became a subject of this documentary. And a lot of the things that you look at, his interview. They interviewed him as a 9-year-old boy at the time of it. And there was a lot of things that were weird, and it didn't match the story the family gave about where he was and stuff like that at the time. Then he has this interview with Dr. Phil, and he says something about, you know, were you involved in her murder? And he's laughing while he says, no, I wasn't involved in it. How many people's reaction is you're laughing about your dead sister when you're denying your involvement? I mean, he's a strange character, though. You look at this kid, and he's just kind of dead in the eyes. And I say kid, he's 29 now, because that was 20 years ago. He was 9 at the time. He's 29 now, so he's not a kid. Mm-hmm. To me, though, 29's a kid. That's sad on my part. But you look at him, he's just kind of dead in the eyes. It's like there's something not quite right there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they led to is when they re-examined the evidence, is like Patsy Ramsey denied that the kids were given a snack, yet they found pieces of, what was it, some kind of fruit or something in her stomach when they did the autopsy. And she denied that she had given him anything. Well, the autopsy revealed this was there. If they didn't have it that night, it would have been digested, and it wasn't digested.
Right.
So obviously they did. So something took place, and they found like two bowls at the table that would have had this fruit in it.
But you got to think, why would she lie about something like that?
Well, that's exactly right. Why would you lie about something like that? Then there's the whole ransom note. You know, if you're going to break into a home and kidnap somebody and leave a ransom note, do you wait till you go in and then find a sheet of paper and a pencil to write your note?
No, you got it planned out.
Right. Well, they find this. It was written on their stationery with a pen or pencil or whatever from their drawer. It was written there. They asked for $118,000 in ransom, which just so happened to be the exact amount of the bonus John Ramsey had just gotten from his business. I mean, all that's just, I mean, that's just very coincidental.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I think about if why it would be written on the same piece of paper from their house is if it was kind of one of those crime of opportunity type things where the person hadn't really planned it out, but somehow they had access to it and just said, hey, I'm going to try this.
Well, there's a lot of things that don't match what the norm is. You know, I mean, that you don't have many kidnappings or any others that you can list where that kind of thing happens. And it, then, you know, that amount, $118,000 is an odd amount to ask for. Why wouldn't you ask for 120?
Yeah.
Or 100, you know, some round number. You don't ask for $118,000 and that happened to be exactly what his bonus was. I mean, there's just so many things that did not fit. And then you've had handwriting experts who have looked at it, at the note. And there are some that say, no, it doesn't match anybody. But there's others that say it matches Patsy Ramsey. That it looks like she tried to disguise her handwriting.
She wrote it.
But there's enough there that they feel like it's attributable to her. So this is what I'm saying in... And then, you know, then of course the crime scene was completely destroyed because they show up, they're called, the police supposedly are called and said, there's a kidnapping, our daughter's missing. So they show up and they, you know, they think they're dealing with a kidnapping. Well, they say, if you search the house, good. John Ramsey goes immediately downstairs, goes right in the room where JonBenet is and picks her up, finds her there dead, picks her up, removes tape where she, her mouth is taped and her hands are taped, removes all that. Brings her up and lays her under the Christmas tree. Right there, the entire scene has been destroyed.
Bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, this is exactly what you don't do.
Yeah.
You know, and all this took place. And it's just so many odd things. And that's where they say they were implicated as far as being accessories, but they weren't the one, they were not, you know, considered the ones that did it. So if they were implicated and they were involved, who would they be trying to protect?
Yeah, their other son.
There's only one, yeah, there's only one logical explanation. And they said that there was a flashlight that was, I think they said the flashlight was missing, but that she had a blow to the head that caused her death. And that they feel that it would have come from a flashlight that was the same make that the Ramseys had owned, but then had gone missing from the scene.
All too weird.
That's what I mean. So they asked these people to come in and do their best evaluation they could do about what happened. They went through it, and they all sat there and went around the table, and they all said, Burke had to have done it. It's probably one of those things where he just got mad. He was jealous of her. She was getting all the attention. She was a beauty, little beauty queen. The parents made over her. And she came in. It was pineapple, I think it was. She came in and took a piece of his pineapple or something. And he probably just grabbed that flashlight and smashed her in the head. Just in a childish act of rage. Now, why wouldn't you just call the cops and say, this happened, this is terrible?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like anything horrible is going to befall the 9-year-old that does that.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure there would be some repercussions from it, but I mean, it's not like there's going to be any kind of criminal ramifications from it. I mean, I guess in a 9-year-old to prison.
Yeah, that's what I think. It was just a poor decision made that they couldn't let their son take the rap for this. So they tried to cover it up. They'd lost their daughter. They couldn't recover. So, well, heck, now I'm going to get sued. I can't say the same thing. I'm just reporting on what I saw on the show. I'm not coming to this conclusion. Nah. I'm just reporting what I saw.
Yeah, I was going to point that out.
I don't have $750 million.
I was going to point that out after we finish this. We're just, you know.
We're just telling you what we saw. We don't know anything for sure. But, you know, these were the kind of things going on. When they're interviewing him as a kid, and he says something about, are there any secrets that you'd like to tell me? And the kid looks at him and says, well, if it was a secret and I told you, it wouldn't be a secret anymore, would it? Well, I'm sure there are 9-year-olds that are capable of putting that together. But that sounds a little psychotic, you know?
Yeah, it's a little
strange. That a 9-year-old can articulate that.
And, you know, you got to feel sorry for the kid, too, for Burke, if this did actually happen to him, that he has to live with that his whole life. That's got to be...
Well, that would explain why he looks messed up now.
Yeah, it does. So the complaint, which was, it was filed in a Michigan court, and that would have been this past Wednesday, which was the, what was Wednesday? The 27th? Well,
5, 6, 7, 8. 28.
So,
I knew when Christmas was. I was counting from Christmas.
So it basically says that there's been other lawsuits that were filed in the late 90s against different tabloids and other media companies that had published claims that Burke was a suspect in the murder, and that those different tabloids had settled those lawsuits with Burke out of court. And also the complaint talks about that the defendant's accusations against Burke echo the accusations made against him by supermarket tabloids years ago. And the key difference is that this time, the accusation was published by the most respected member of American broadcast media, CBS. Is CBS the most respected member of American broadcast media?
Apparently so, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
I've got two theories about this to promote.
What's that?
All right, one is that he came out because he's the one that approached Dr. Phil about being on the show, you know, and he came out and he said, I want to have an interview with you about this. So, of course, they had him on. So that's kind of what started all this.
When was he on Dr. Phil?
He was on Dr. Phil prior to this documentary era.
Like maybe a year ago or before?
Yeah, something like that. It was, and, you know, they said, why would you want to do this? Well, he said, the 20-year anniversary is coming up. I know the media is going to pick up on that and start rehashing all this. So it's better for me to just go ahead and get out there and talk about it rather than wait for whatever they're going to do.
Fair enough.
Okay. I can understand that. But what if he went out there and did that just to provoke these things so that knowing people would come out and he's the only likely suspect in this thing come back to him, then he can turn around and file a defamation suit. Maybe it was all about money. And he was wanting people to do that so that he could file the suit.
He was asking to be defamed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He prompted all this and brought this scrutiny upon himself so that they could accuse him of it. And then he could turn around and say, oh, I've been wronged. I need money.
That's actually an affirmative defense to defamation as well, is that you were the one who actually promoted to put out your own defamation. You spread it yourself.
So that's one theory I have on this. But I have one other. That's the flip side of the coin.
And we'll get to that after the break.
Okay, now that the break's over.
that would have been a great tie-in, wouldn't it?
I know. Film at 11.
Yeah, if we only had some advertisers.
I know. Oh, well. Yeah. They don't know what they're missing.
I know.
The other one is, what if they did all this knowing that he would file the lawsuit? Now, what happens if he gets into a civil lawsuit?
Not following here.
All right. He may be asked to testify in this lawsuit, right?
Yeah, possibly.
So it opens the door for questions you can ask him about things that may bring up contradictory statements to what he said in the past. So after this civil lawsuit, there opens the door to be able to ask him questions. Now you file the criminal suit. So maybe they're trying to get him on record and get him. They didn't have enough to charge him. So you get him to file the civil suit. Now you can ask him questions and interrogate him, per se, to turn around and use against him in the criminal suit.
So you think CBS is trying to dispense some justice here?
Or they're in cahoots with someone's branch of the justice system that is trying to gather evidence and solve this thing.
That's some next level stuff right there.
I'm just saying, those are both sides of the coin. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think about these things deeply. I don't have much else to do.
Well, the lawsuit he filed.
Wouldn't that work?
I mean, it could. You got to think about it. If he makes these statements in a civil context, he could possibly implicate himself.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Criminal matter. So, but then again, I'm sure he's going to have counsel who's going to advise him to not answer certain questions.
Yeah, but you know, you always see in the movies where they break him down and they say something to him and then they get him pissed off and then the guy stands up. That's right, damn it. I did it. And there's nothing you can do about it. I got away with it. Oops.
Yeah, that never happens.
Yeah, I see it in the movies all the time and on TV and stuff.
Nah, never happens.
The criminal justice SUV whatever.
The criminal justice. Yeah, I love those things. They got so many cup holders.
Yeah, they do that. They do things like that, and they break down and they confess.
Yeah, it doesn't ever happen. I mean, it might happen like with the police when they're interrogating because they've been hitting them with phone books and stuff, but in court, no, it doesn't happen like that.
Wow, if I had a rubber hose.
Yeah, up your nose with a rubber hose?
No, don't you remember where that's from? Oh, you weren't there the other night.
No.
Our traditional Christmas movie that we watch.
Oh, Christmas Vacation?
Yeah. When they tell them the boss didn't give them bonuses.
Oh.
And the police captain or whatever, the SWAT team just broke into the house. Why, if I had a rubber hose. Wait, I've corrected all that.
I don't remember that line, but I remember the scene, but I don't remember that line. It's funny. Well, the lawsuit is, CBS has declined comment on this whole lawsuit, but the lawsuit is named Critical Content, which is the production company that was behind the series. Other defendants are Dr. Warner Spitz, an investigator for the series, who was the subject of a separate $150 defamation lawsuit by Ramsey in October.
He's a forensic scientist who came up with the same conclusion on his own.
Yep. That lawsuit, which this article says it's still pending, it stemmed from a comment Spitz made in a radio interview. And evidently Spitz's lawyer has filed a motion for dismissal and says that basically the First Amendment protects those comments. So...
Where does that leave us? In a movie or in a documentary, and people are just asked to, okay, here's the stuff, follow it through, now what do you think? And you answer the question, next thing you know, you're in a lawsuit. $750 million, that ain't chump change.
No.
I mean, Zuckerberg might be, but the rest of us, it's not.
Well, defamation, they're hard cases to win. They really are. You just don't see them that often. I mean, you hear it thrown about and you think, oh, defamation this, defamation that. But in all honesty and practical purposes, it just doesn't happen.
I'm talking about, though, that you get a bunch of people who this is their job. You present them with evidence and you say, what do you think happened? They each independently, they went around the table. Who do you think did it? Who do you think did it? Who do you think did it? And they gave their opinion. Are you allowed to be sued? For your opinion? I mean, I know anybody can sue anybody, but is that really something? I mean, that somebody asked your opinion and you state it, now you can be sued?
Well, the way you would break this down is that you would look at what is the law in Michigan as it relates to defamation, and then you have to go through some different, probably some different steps. And I have no idea about the Michigan defamation law.
So it's just Michigan because that's the state they filed it in.
Correct.
Why so, Michigan? Oh, is that where he lives now, I guess? I don't know.
Jurisdictionally, I mean, maybe he's a resident of Michigan. Probably it could be removed to federal court pretty easily because of the different CBS, is, I'm sure, is not in Michigan. The defendants probably aren't in Michigan. So I'm sure this will probably be tried in federal court, I would assume. Probably be removed. But so under Michigan, it'd still be under Michigan law. It would just be tried in the federal court system, applying Michigan law. But the next analysis would be you'd have to look at Burke Ramsey and determine, is he a public figure? Because under defamation law, that's the crucial thing. Public figure versus private figure is a very important line when you look at these cases, because public figures have less protections than private figures.
That'd be debatable.
Yeah.
Because you could walk up to a standard, you know, Joe Schmo on the street and say, do you know who Burke Ramsey is? No. Well, you heard of JonBenet Ramsey? Oh, is he related to her? But I don't know that they know right off who he was.
Right. So there's there's different case law, different states would say different things. People running for office, sometimes that can make them a public individual. And if you're a public individual, you don't have all the same protections private individuals do, because you're actually putting yourself out there for more public scrutiny.
Well, if you go on Dr. Phil, you just made yourself public, right?
That's true. Yeah, he could. That would be a good argument. He brought himself out. He made himself a public figure, so therefore he is entitled to less protections.
He outed himself.
Yeah. So that would be actually something very good to look at.
Well, maybe I should apply for the bar.
Yeah,
I have quite a mind for this, don't I, counselor?
You've got a brilliant legal mind.
The defense rests.
But if he is a public figure, then generally the standard kind of shifts, and that's when that whole malice, you have to show actual malice for these statements. So, and I'm talking...
I don't think there was malice, though, involved in the documentary.
And I'm talking very generally here, because I have no idea about Michigan law. But I would think that if you have a public figure, the general way it works is that you have to show some sort of malice that they're doing it with malicious intent to harm them. And if you saw the show and you didn't think it was presented to malicious intent, then you know this lawsuit may fall flat.
Well, I mean, to me, they just went through and retraced the evidence and brought in their own experts for it. And, you know, they tried to go through the theory of that somebody broke in the house and did it. And with what they showed, it seemed highly unlikely that that was what happened. So then the only thing left is it was just the people that were in the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think they all came to the opinion on their own. They were from different backgrounds. I mean, the people that were involved, not all of them, some of them were police. Some of them were forensic people. Some of them had other backgrounds. I don't remember what they all are. But there was about 9 of them, I think. And at the end of the show, they sat down around a table and they went around the room with the evidence you've been presented. Who do you think did this? And they all were unanimous in that.
Did they have any expert on there who was a lawyer that also had a podcast that had a proclivity for drinking beer?
No, that would just been us. Or you, because I'm not a lawyer.
You're just a dude.
I'm just a dude. I'm just a dude. We're just your regular Joe Schmo on the street.
That's right.
So drink a few beers and talk about some law things.
Talk law stuff.
Law stuff.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. It's going to bring us to the next segment.
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is where we go over different legal terms that we talked about on the show. And we just kind of define them and really hammer them home to make sure you understand what they are.
Just like Rasputin and his alleged enlargement. Hammer them home.
The first...
you can ignore that if you want.
The first term is scandalous magnatum.
That is defamatory remarks from the old... It's a Latin term that they used in England that defined that.
Libels upon peers.
Libels upon peers, because you can't libel those that are beneath you. Remember that? Remember we had that for when we talked about that episode?
That's right.
It was only peers or those that are greater than you.
Yeah.
But ones that were below you, you could talk about them. You could talk trash about them all you want. They can't do nothing about it.
That was a fun episode. The next term is Tsarina.
Tsarina, that's the female czar. That's the wife of the czar, is the Tsarina. And she has to be trained in being a ballerina.
Yeah, she may or may not be a dancer.
Yeah.
So the next term is defamation.
Defamation? Well, that's when you say something that somebody takes that causes harm or injury to their character or person, and they feel the need to sue you. And truth is the only defense, as long as it's not malicious.
And there's one crucial element that you left out.
Uh-oh.
It has to be published to a third person.
Oh, okay.
You have to publish it, which that's kind of a given if it's out there.
So I can't just tell you something about you that doesn't make it defamatory. If there's a third person there and they hear me tell you about you,
generally speaking, it's defamatory. Yeah, it has to be published to a third person. So now the lawsuit with Brooke Ramsey, where he's suing CBS, he's seeking, the number was $750 million.
Right.
But it's $250 million in compensatory damages and $500 million in punitive damages.
Yes.
Do you know the difference between compensatory versus punitive?
Compensatory is the actual damage that it has caused him, and punitive is the amount for which they should be punished. So it's amount to basically get their attention and say, don't ever do this again.
Hurrah. Way to answer it. You nailed it.
All right.
Yep. Punitives are meant to punish or correct behavior.
Hey, I had one semester of business law.
Did you talk about punitive damages a lot?
We might have, because I knew something about those.
That's funny. Well, that does it for legal briefs.
Well, all right, good. Well, I got about 100 on that, didn't I? Or at least a 95.
Yeah. Yeah.
I missed a little piece of that one, the third party.
Yeah, but you know what? You had the gist of it. I think that was kind of like some bonus material.
Bonus material. I like bonus material.
Yeah, it's good. It's a bonus.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we got to talk about old Rasputin. I've heard about that guy before, and he was a real unknown figure.
He was. Know? When we were doing this episode, I really wanted to have some Rasputin, some Russian Imperial Stouts to drink while we did it.
Well, we drank those a couple weeks ago.
Well, we had some Russian Imperial Stouts, but
they weren't Rasputin.
The Rasputin ones.
They evidently are Rasputin ones.
They got a little bit of real Rasputin in every one of them.
I don't think I want it there.
That would be horrible.
That would be terrible. I got to track those down. But you know what it has made me want to do?
What's that?
I'm going to go watch some of these old Rasputin movies.
Yeah.
I mean, now some of these I've heard of. The ones from the 70s and 80s that they mentioned in there. And I want to look some of those up, but he's a real, I mean, there's so many stories out there. You could go anywhere you want. If you wanted to create a story about a guy, that is a guy that you could create a story about.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, again, look at his picture on the internet.
You know who he looks like? Devil Lance Hatfield.
Yeah, he does. He kind of has that look to him.
Yeah. I mean, they could be twin brothers, I think.
Well, you know, our family is related to the Hatfields.
Well, I know that. I know that. That's why I've seen so many of those pictures. But how about we do that? We do a Hatfield and McCoy with Rasputin on the side of the Hatfields.
Yeah.
Because he looks like them.
A mashup?
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody in that time period looked like Rasputin.
But I still promote that he was just a Russian Forrest Gump.
The right dude at the right time.
He just ended up in the right place at the right time. He traveled around. He wandered around. He talked to the right people at the right time. Just like Forrest Gump. I mean, I think that you could remake a Russian Forrest Gump with Rasputin as a guy. That would be it. And you'd feel sorry for him at the end when he got killed because he was just a simple-soned bitch.
You should start pinning that. I'd watch it.
Well, I'd start working on that. That'll be my next. That'll be a rock opera.
Be your opus?
Yeah, it'd be my opus.
Well, that does it for the season 2 premiere of Court Appointed.
Season 2!
Bigger, badder, more balls.
More balls and bigger balls.
Oh, bigger balls.
Bigger balls. Sorry.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, Well, then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. CODA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist CODA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at CODA.com. That's CODA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.